Hey, welcome back to Therapy Insiders. Thanks for tuning in. On this episode, we got into tech. And if you've been listening for a while, you know that we love the tech world. We talk about it all the time. We're fans of it. We use it all the time. Erson and I joke around about his love of Android. And obviously, I use a lot of Apple products. On this episode, though, we actually talked with a tech startup CEO. And she is doing something that we talk about a lot, which is focusing on the patient experience. Except her company, Narrative DX, is working on scaling that. That's what startups and entrepreneurs are all about, is the scale. Getting something and then exploding it, which involves raising funds, which means going non-stop for growth. In Senem Gonay's case, that growth helps patients in hospitals and in the healthcare experience world. I really hope you enjoyed this podcast. I really enjoyed recording it and talking with Senem. And we had a special guest host on this episode, my partner in UpDoc Media, Dr. Ben Fung. So have a listen. Let us know what you think. And if you have any patient experience stories, please share them with us on Twitter. Tweet at me at Therapy Insiders or at UpDoc Media. And now, on to Therapy Insiders. We are proud to be sponsored by WebPT, the end-to-end business solution for private practice PTs, OTs, and SLPs, providing everything from documentation and scheduling to RCM service, billing software, and outcome tracking. WebPT's mission is to help rehab therapists achieve greatness in practice, and that starts with education. That's why WebPT is offering a free guide to healthcare payment reform. To download it today, visit webpt.com/pay-for-performance. And now, on to Therapy Insiders. Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders. Dr. Gene Shirakabrad here with a special co-host today, Dr. Ben Fung. Ben, what's going on, man? How are you?
Doing very, very well. Hailing out of San Diego. We miss you here on the West Coast.
I miss the West Coast too. It was fun when we went to CSM and got to hang out. And but now it's back to real life, back to work, back to building, creating, and chatting.
That's what it's all about.
That's right. That's right. It's about connections. It's about building relationships. And it's about building experiences, Ben. And experiences are not only big in everyday business. Every single business is about building experiences with customers. And I think most successful businesses know that at this point. It's also a big movement that's picking up steam, seems like, every week in the healthcare sector, thankfully, right? I mean, patient experience, you would think it's common sense, common knowledge at this point that you need to build healthcare around the user, the patient, but that's still in infancy.
Hey, that's just crazy to me. I mean, from just a global standpoint, you know, healthcare as it stands, regardless of how you want to take a look at it, it's still a business in its own behavior. And the fact that it's taken this long for, you know, the end user, customer, patient experience, and engagement levels to finally take, you know, the front row seat of our attentions, it's beyond me. But I'm very glad that it's happening. I'm glad it's happening because, you know, it's going to be better for all of us that provide healthcare. But more importantly, it's going to be better for those that experience it.
Yeah, because it as more companies and more hospitals and big healthcare influencers and thinkers are doubling down on the experience, they're also doubling down on scaling the integration of it. And obviously, to scale something, one of the best things you can do is incorporate data and outcomes and technology. And we're living at a time where technology is growing, but so is the healthcare sector in itself. It's evolving. And there's a lot of cool stuff coming out of Silicon Valley, but other places as well that are pumping out a lot of cool technology. And obviously on Twitter, we get to see a lot of that, which is one of the big reasons to be on Twitter, is to check out what's going on and connect with people. And Ben, I connected with somebody probably close to a year ago, and I was watching one of her presentations of her company, which is Narrative DX, and I was so impressed by where it was. And it was still a little bit early. The company was just coming along. And I reached out to her, and we had a conversation about patient experience and technology. And now it's culminated in her being on this podcast. And I'm talking about Senem Gunay. Did I say that right, Senem?
That's correct. Yes, thank you.
I was practicing that in my head for a solid 5 minutes. but welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us. And I'm really excited. Just want to talk about your product, obviously, but the whole concept of the patient experience. And so if you could share with us, what made you want to get into this and push the patient experience forward?
Thank you very much for having me on this podcast. It's a pleasure. The concepts began with my work in grad school. I got my PhD at the University of Texas at Austin and worked with the scholar who was by himself for 42 years or so, the Healthcare Management and Policy Department in the Business School at UT Austin. And his work was in complexity theory and applying that theory into understanding complex organizations such as organizations of care delivery. And he and I got to working together on my dissertation because I brought this training with me from my master's about language data, importance of being able to learn from data that reflect people's own experiences from their own accounts, and being able to add up this kind of data and show trends over time, just like you would with numbers, in order to understand what's going on in a complex organization that people make up, and then influence change in such complex organizations. So that was the very, very beginning of the thought. And then I was a faculty member at the State University of New York after getting my PhD from UT. But there was this bug in me to take my training, my work during grad school and early academic work, into this space where it was going to make a difference. And that happened when I was actually giving a doctoral seminar in the Department of Informatics. And I had no idea that in my seminar was an emergency room physician. At the end of the semester, he came to me and said, you know, we heard about your lectures, and I understand you're very passionate about this topic, narrative data, what it means, how do you need to collect it, how do you need to analyze it, and what do you need to do with it in order to understand complex problems and complex organizations. If you can bring it to healthcare, I think you're going to find your calling. So I took that piece of advice very seriously, as you can tell, and basically came back home to Austin, Texas to start Narrative DX. And in order to do that, of course, I teamed up with wonderful people. The one of the most significant one of those people is my co-founder, Kyle Robertson, who took the concept and built it into the product that we have today.
That's really cool. And Austin is pretty much Silicon Valley 2.0 at this point, right? It just, I've heard it's exploded in that regard.
Yes, it is. It has had waves of startup activity. In the 80s, it started with semiconductors, and gaming came to town in the 90s. And then until about a decade ago, it was pretty much leading the charge in consumer-facing apps, maybe after Silicon Valley. And in the last 5 years or so, there has been a great movement in health IT in Austin as well.
That's very cool. So let's talk about scaling the patient experience. You're collecting data with Narrative DX, and you're trying to use something objective and emotionless to drive something that's highly emotional. How does that work?
That's correct. But that's what where we come in, because of the kind of the data and analysis that we bring to table in this space. In order to measure patient experience, hospitals are now mandated to administer patient satisfaction surveys. And that does take the emotion out of everything, out of a care episode that's very much about emotions. Surveys, when you mark check boxes on a survey, there's no emotion there. But it's important for hospitals to understand where they stand, how they do. That's why they're administering these surveys. The emotion is in the accounts of patients from their own words, from their own perspectives. And these days, they actually talk about their experiences in a very distinct platforms. So there is the kind of data, the kind of data that we go after, where you can capture that emotion. And that's narrative data. That's the little nugget that you capture either in an open-ended response in a survey, or in a complaint letter or a compliment letter, or in social media when people talk about their experiences on Yelp or on doctor review sites. But to this date, it has been quite difficult to pull all this together and make sense of it all for providers to be able to hear the voice of their patients from their own words and do something about it. And that's what we are bringing into patient experience.
And how does that work? If you don't mind, just breaking down, does Narrative DX, does the algorithm pick up certain highly emotional words and then grades it on certain levels in the inner works? Like, what is the system of it actually ranking that narrative?
With Narrative DX, we developed a software platform based on natural language processing that pulls patient comments, verbatim patient feedback from multiple sources, wherever patients talk about their experiences from their own words. This could be in open-ended responses, in patient satisfaction surveys. It could be in compliment complaint letters, rounding, bedside feedback, or on social media, doctor review sites, wherever patients talk about their experiences in their own those sources, aggregate them. And the first step in our analytical process is categorizing all these comments from these multiple sources according to the major areas of patient experience as defined by CAP surveys, for example, nurse communication, doctor communication, cleanliness of the environment, etc. So what we do is we look at all these comments, and the provider receives their scores. Okay, 70% of the time, patients say nurses are always courteous and respectful. And this is the data point that they need to work with. This is what they have. And this allows them to compare their performance to the previous quarter and then compare themselves to their peers in the same category, etc. But it really doesn't tell you this number. 70% of the time, you are doing something always. It doesn't say anything about the experience behind this rating from the patient's perspective. And what you need to do in order to improve this score over time, because that's what hospitals and other providers are now mandated to do. That kind of insight that you can act on is never going to be in the score that you get from the survey. It's never going to be reflected in any checkbox because it's very much about a very, very personal and significant experience woven with significant emotions, and no survey on the planet will be able to reflect that.
And it's, the totality, it's literally what gets, it's the stuff that gets lost in the cracks. It's the little things, right? It's the little things that actually create connections and relationships.
That's right. And that's in the data, narrative data, that reflects that experience with its emotional component. And by categorizing this kind of data from pulling it from wherever it exists and showing, okay, when you're getting the score on your patient satisfaction, 70% of the time, nurses are doing something always. This is what your patients are telling you in their own words, in aggregate, about that score. when they give you 70%, these are the themes that are coming to surface from their own accounts of their experiences. When they're giving you 70%, they're talking about the lack of availability of nurses overall in this quarter. That's why you're experiencing, say, a decrease in your top box scores, because your nurses aren't being available and patients do not like that. And on the flip side, what's happening positively? A significant component of natural language processing is sentiment analysis. And because we built our engine specifically, uniquely on patient experience data over several years, our sentiment analysis is 70% more accurate than any other NLP engine out there doing free text analysis. So when we look at a comment and categorize it as positive, negative, or neutral, it's very accurate. So we also add up all the favorable comments, what patients are talking positively about their experiences, and say, this is working out for you. This is what your patients are happy about. They really appreciate you being kind and attentive in your interactions with them. So keep doing that. We basically help them understand what that score is, put it in context by bringing the context of the care experience into measuring satisfaction in patient experience so they can actually act on it and do the right things from the patient's perspective.
Is there like a standard deviation of just people complaining for the sake of complaining because they're that's their personality or because they're in pain? Like, is there a grading of effectiveness of that narrative?
That's true. And by being able to pull from multiple sources, we work around that problem, because it tends to be that when people have extreme experiences, either extremely positive and extremely negative, they tend to be more vocal, as you might imagine. But by sort of expanding the sources that we pull from, we take care of that problem in that way. And also, it is true that in some parts, this is a regional, actually, issue as well. In some parts of the country, patients in the Northeast specifically, patients tend to share negative experiences more than positive experiences. In the South, hospital ratings, even in the same sort of peer category, seem to be higher than those in the Northeast. So there are these things factored into the results, and we do provide that kind of weighing the results and showing what's actually in aggregate the case.
So, Senna, this is very interesting to me, just because I have an engineering background, and some of that, you know, is database management and whatnot. It seems that you've been able to create a system that bridges the technology, that two-dimensional flat, non-emotional problem of surveys and checkboxes and satisfaction scores, and you've been able to bring that emotion, bring that humanity through the technology, and bring stories with it. That's significant. Are there some stories you can share, kind of like some common themes of, you know, what perhaps healthcare is doing right, what healthcare is doing wrong, and where we can improve?
I always tell this incident that's very telling of the power of this kind of approach, being able to tap into patients' own words and learning from them what their experiences are, because you sometimes don't know what question to ask. And if you do keyword searches, for example, on this kind of data, you always ask the questions you know to ask to the data. What we do with natural language processing is letting the data speak to us, so we can actually let the hospital hear the voice of their patients, and they can literally claim that's what they're hearing, because all these findings in aggregate are coming from patients' own words. And this is exactly what happened. It was one of our very early implementations. The hospital was having persistently low scores in nurse communication, and they did the right things. You know, they started working more intensely with their survey vendor. They brought in consultants. Things were not moving in the right direction. And of course, there are always a lot of different variables when it comes to trying to improve a score such as nurse communication, which is one of the most difficult scores to improve. But we brought our approach and did a very thorough analysis of all of their patient comments as they're related to nurse communication, and specifically nurse listening. What came out, believe it or not, was that when patients gave lower scores about nurse communication and nurse listening, their comments had these common themes of cold nights, uncomfortable room temperatures, no blankets. Cold nights.
Blankets are the key to nursing satisfaction.
Well, exactly. On the survey, there's no box to check for this experience. Nothing to do with nurse listening. It wasn't an interpersonal issue. It was really something about the blankets. And we told the administrators, stock your units with more blankets and see what happens. Of course, they were doing other things at the time, and they took this insight from our analysis and bought more blankets, and the scores did move for them.
So much about the environment, it sounds, that, you know, we on the supply side of healthcare, I think we focus so much on the services, right? The interventions, the tangible things that we measure.
Yeah.
But it sounds like so much of what the patient, you know, our customers experience have so much more to do with the surrounding, the circumstance of how we provide what we provide.
It's what you do, of course, the high quality care that you need to provide as a clinician is key, but also how you do it. It's also now becoming a sort of common finding in our work that patients are very attentive to how knowledgeable a clinician is. They respect clinical knowledge very much, but even more so, they pay attention to kindness in the delivery of a message, politeness. So as they make choices, they become more attuned to those comments about how kind and approachable a clinician is, as well as his or her knowledgeability. So it's in the how you're delivering the service that you're expected to do in that highest quality possible is the key of when it comes to patient experience.
That's really cool. I think, first of all, we're big fans of anything that moves the healthcare profession forward. And obviously there's, for a discipline that is so based on evidence and so based on outcomes, we lose the most important thing, which is the relationship with the people we're trying to help. Because yes, at the end of the day, it's still businesses, whether it's a hospital, whether it's a private practice, it's still in the world of business. But even the most successful businesses understand that it's based on relationships and connections that you make within that business and other businesses. So to have something that is mandated finally to focus on, for them to get paid to focus on improving the experience, I think says something in the first place, that you have to essentially say you're not getting paid unless people are happy. But the fact that they're catching up with this is very exciting.
That is true. Unhappy patients are now very, very expensive for hospitals. And it puts the incentive that was always there in the right place financially as well. When I first started talking with chief nursing officers, we talk with different kinds of executives. Now there's a C-level position designated specifically for patient experience in most leading institutions, a chief patient experience officer. But even before then, chief nursing officers were in charge of making sure that the quality of care was there and patients were getting the care that they needed with the experiences that they wanted to have. So I first reached out to chief nursing officers to sort of validate the idea of the concept behind our product. And they would always tell me, finally, the financial incentives are catching up with the mission of our work. They really took it to heart that this became important again all of a sudden, because there's a financial incentive out there. But this has always been part of someone who got into the profession of nursing. They got into that profession because they cared, because they cared for people and they wanted to build relationships with people and heal them and give them a good experience during that process. So I think now everything is aligning the clinical mission of the profession with the financial incentives of the industry. And with what we do, one of our missions, I think one of our critical missions is to bring an evidence basis to this kind of data that has been historically shelved away as hard to process soft data. Well, not anymore. Now we have the technology to actually create a knowledge repertoire, an evidence basis out of what patients say in their own narratives about their experiences.
That's really cool. And soft data, hard data, it's a blur now because we're finding out that even as we were so focused on hard skills and techniques and the things that we feel like were important, we're starting to find out that it's the soft skills that are just as important as well. That connection, that listening, the things that haven't been measured until now as important, which sounds like that's what you're doing.
Yes.
So go ahead, Ben.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
These soft skills, you know, I love that you're bringing that up, Gene. And, you know, Senem, I have a question for you. You know, a lot of organizations tend to model out soft skills, right? They have a service model or they have their, you know, like Ritz-Carlton has their gold standards. Are you seeing anything, you know, in you know, your work that demonstrates that these more or less spieled and structured models, do they lose humanity at all? Because I know that's a concern for a lot of organizations. Or do they actually bolster the patient experience by having kind of a systematic approach of how, you know, staff in mass engage the patient?
That's a very good question. Actually, that was one of the things that my former student, if you remember, when I was talking about sort of the beginning of this idea behind Narrative DX, and it was this conversation that I had with a former student of mine who was an emergency room physician. He brought that point to me when he made the case that I need to bring this approach to healthcare. And he said, you know, we interact with a lot of folks who come in and talk to us about how we need to do our work in order to do it most effectively with the highest, best outcomes. And they're very smart people. They bring in these different approaches, and you know what those approaches are from different industries, but it doesn't resonate with clinicians. It's something else when you can actually bring evidence about, you know, how to do something, how to change your behavior in order to accommodate the patient's needs so you can actually create a better outcome. When that evidence comes from actually the work that you do and from the setting where you do that work, from the very interaction that you have with the patient for whom you're trying to create a better outcome, that kind of evidence resonates with clinicians a lot better than these more sort of packaged approaches that come into healthcare from other industries. Even though they're valuable, they have important sort of nuggets that healthcare professionals learn from, but it just resonates differently, better, when that evidence basis is from their own world, so to speak.
Very cool. Now, is this something that can grow? Obviously, we live in a bit of a physical therapy world ourselves. Is this something that is, you see as mainly in big systems like hospitals, or can your technology or this type of processes be integrated into physical therapy, into private practices?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think it's really setting specific. We started our work with hospitals and hospital networks because that's where the focus was in the industry, but providing a better experience is the part of the clinical mission and concern for every type of provider, as you very well know. So there's no reason why these questions cannot be addressed, and this kind of solution cannot be brought into other segments of the care delivery system. And we are bringing it to all kinds of different providers, even though we started out with hospitals.
That's awesome. Yeah, it'll be cool to track as you keep growing, and it looks like you're growing at a pretty good rate. start integrating into more avenues and more healthcare settings. So speaking of growth, I want to switch gears a little bit and actually talk about you as an entrepreneur and what it's like to build a tech company, because we, Ben and I, love it. We're working on one ourselves. But I feel like, first of all, there's a very muddy definition or delineation between business owner and entrepreneur, because those are two different worlds, having a lifestyle business versus a scalable startup. And you're definitely on the latter of that. What's your experience been like, one, being an entrepreneur, two, being a female entrepreneur, and then just growing a tech startup, doing the seed funding and investor stuff, all that stuff?
Very good question, especially on the International Day of Women, March
exactly.
8th. Shout out to all women entrepreneurs out there. I am, I think, as different as somebody could get. I'm sure maybe somebody could get a little bit more different than me, but I am a woman, and I am a woman who did not grow up in the United States. I came to this country when I was 22 years old. I grew up in Istanbul, Turkey, and my background is in social sciences, and I'm building a technology company now. Imagine that.
Have you ever been to Hagia Sophia when you were living there?
Of course I have. Yes.
God, that is on my bucket list of things to see is Hagia Sophia. Is it as incredible as the pictures and the videos?
It is. It's quite a sight. Yes. I think you'll enjoy visiting. So try to check that as soon as possible.
Okay. Now back to the entrepreneur talk. All right. Social sciences, what brought you to the tech world, to the entrepreneurial world?
Because the innovation that I wanted to bring was a technology innovation. And as I said, I partnered with individuals who made it happen with me. And I couldn't have done it without them, because I don't have that background. And I don't have that perspective into building a company as a technology company. So my technical co-founder took a very big role in doing that.
And that's Kyle?
That's Kyle. That's correct. Kyle Robertson. So I didn't do it by myself by any means. But, we went out there together and faced everything that entrepreneurs starting a technology company from scratch have to face, validating our product concept, finding our first customers, and then, of course, finding investment. So, and in all these experiences, even though, I wasn't all by myself, my co-founder was with me. Of course, you're challenged personally, individually, because you're constantly being measured, especially when you're fundraising about, what kind of person you are and whether you can do this. And I believe I pushed, people around me as much as they pushed me, because I really don't think they had encountered someone with my background and outlook to life many times before.
Right.
So it was a learning curve for everyone involved. And I take that as part of the challenge and part of the joy, so if I might say. It's definitely a wonderful privilege to be able to stretch yourself out of your comfort zone and to get in front of people who are not used to seeing individuals like you with an idea that you believe in, and you get their buy-in at every step of the way. It's been the most challenging thing I have done. It's been the most gratifying thing I have done.
So along those steps, and I know that there's plenty of information coming out how very the difference between the genders and males and females, especially in the tech startup world, as you're going through that, and you and Kyle partnered, which is obviously one of the best ways to do it when you match up with somebody that has other strengths instead of trying to make your weaknesses stronger, which is very tough to do. I just actually did a blog post on that where people should just focus on doubling down on their strengths instead of trying to load them up or get their weaknesses better. But as you're going through this, as you and Kyle partnered, did you first build a working prototype, a beta, and then start onboarding users? Or did you go build like a prototype and go right into the investment route?
We built the prototype and went the investment route and didn't go very far in that phase. And we realized we needed to validate the product in the markets, and we signed up customers with a pilot implementations. And then we got the interest of investors.
So what happened when you first tried to get investors?
They understood that we were onto something, but they wanted proof. As you know very well how the sort of the investment world works, nobody wants to be the first in. We started talking with investors who are now who invested in finally after a year came on board and invested in us. We started talking with them at the very, very beginning. But those conversations were just sort of the first encounters of a long-term relationship, so to speak. They weren't ready to jump on board, and we realized now that we needed to do a lot more to get their buy-in. So that's what we did. Actually, one of the very important things we did was attending a healthcare-specific accelerator program, Dream It Health in Philadelphia. That was a very critical decision for the business because we were in Austin. We did not necessarily want to leave Austin, but the opportunity came to us. We were encouraged to apply. We did, and when we got in, we really couldn't turn it down and uprooted ourselves. Got in a car together, the two co-founders and a Siberian Husky traveled across the country, to attend this accelerator program for 17, 18 weeks in Philadelphia. And that there, we really enhanced the product and then started our first outreach to institutions in the Northeast, Philadelphia and the vicinity, and New York and New Jersey. And got a very good response with what we had at the time, which was, you know, close enough to what we have today, but not as good. It has improved significantly since then, but it did, you know, give the customer the sense that it showed the capability that we were talking about, and it did provide the results that we said we would. So it worked. And with that prototype, we had a few pilot implementations with leading institutions, and then everything kind of came after that. After that initial success, we came back to the investors, and that's actually how we came back to Austin, because those early conversations started perking up again. People who heard us at the inception and knew we were onto something but wanted more proof, did see the proof and said, okay, now we believe you're onto something, but you got to come back to Austin if you want our money. And that's what we did.
Which is, that's proof that is so unique. Not just proof that your concept works, but proof that you as founders are willing to take a no or not yet. And instead of folding down and saying, oh, we're not getting money, that you use that as motivation to jumpstart the business. I mean, if that's a huge, huge thing for investors. Once they see that the founders are legit and motivated and are actually actionable, then the checkbooks will open up.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're very right about that. That conviction was always there. Conviction and perseverance, that will get you where you want to go.
That'll do it. Gotta keep going. Awesome. So what's next for Narrative DX? And if our listeners, if anybody wants to find out more about it or demo it or try it, what's the next steps?
Absolutely. You know, we're growing rapidly. We started in Central Texas and we went to the Northeast, and we have built traction in Central Texas and in the Northeast and growing in those areas. and now we're actually signing up institutions on the West Coast as well. So we are in a very, very rapid growth phase. You can go to our website, www.narrativedx.com, and get an overview of who we are and what we have done to date. We'll be happy to show you the product in action. We do online demos every day to different parts of the country. So we'll be very happy to get demo requests and show Narrative DX in action to anybody who wants to see. And they can also speak to our customers in different parts of the country to hear from their own perspective what we've been able to do for them. We'll be happy to provide those references as well.
Awesome. And we'll put all that on our show page on updocmedia.com as well. Awesome. What about you? If our listeners want to ask you questions, find out anything about you, where can they find you on social media or anything like that?
Sure. I'm on Twitter at Senem NDX. I'm also on LinkedIn. They can definitely reach me there. They can reach me through our website as well. I have taken on this title, Chief Patient Experience Officer, founder and Chief Patient Experience Officer, because we at Narrative DX believe that we are in this sort of boat of improving patient experience together with the frontline professionals out there. So I took on the job, and I'm very happy about taking on this job full time to reach out to patient experience officers out there and learn as they learn the ropes of this new position in healthcare institutions, learn about their needs and expectations, their challenges, their everyday lives. So I'm always open to talking to any patient experience officer out there with any kinds of questions about any aspect of their work, and specifically about dealing with, you know, patients' comments, so they can hear the voice of their patients. And if they have any specific questions about this very issue that we've set out to innovate in this space, I am always available.
Awesome. And Twitter is a perfect place to keep these conversations going as well. And it's, out of all the social medias, Twitter is an incredibly tangible place for conversations that lead to actions. I mean, there's so many interactions that I can personally attest to that have led to really significant connections and change and movements. And there's a lot of people that are really out there promoting that on Twitter, like our friend Andy, at better known as at Cancer Geek.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, I am very passionate about it myself. I came on board a bit later, but now that you know, I got the taste of it, it is the best form of media, really, to connect with people and start really interesting conversations.
Absolutely. Well, Ben, any closing thoughts?
Well, I just think that, you know, there's some awesome takeaways, you know, on several sides, both the entrepreneurial side, where you just have to have the grit and you have to believe in what you're doing, have that passion and infect others and ultimately investors for it. And I think one that story about blankets is just it's resonating with me on how we provide care. We really got to wrap our minds around the circumstances, the humanistic and emotional experiences that our customers are undergoing, so much more so than, you know, some of the outcomes. And, you know, Senem brings up a great point where it's hard to sell that sometimes. It's hard to sell a service model to clinicians. And so by bringing the data, we can finally bridge that gap between, you know, what the patients are experiencing, what we as clinicians want to do scientifically, what the data is saying, and finally creating kind of a fourth dimensional model where we can really push that patient experience and the consumer experience in healthcare forward. So great, great stuff.
Well said, well said. Well, Senem, thanks so much for joining us. I'm looking forward to having regular conversations with you as Narrative DX continues to grow. And I'm really excited about big things for you and your company.
Thank you very much, Gene. Thank you very much, Ben. It's been a pleasure talking with you. I am looking forward to the next time myself.
Absolutely. All right. I hope you enjoyed that episode. I think there's a lot of lessons that you can take away from that, or at least a lot of mindset strategies And one of my favorites was when Sinem was telling the story about going for funding the first time, and they didn't get it. They had this awesome idea, a product in development. They had a lot of pedigree with Sinem having a PhD, but investors, that was not enough for them. So what did they do? Instead of packing up and saying, well, it didn't work, nobody gave us money, they doubled down. They said, this is why it didn't work. This is what we have to do. And they came back and they got their funding. And now they're an extremely high growth company and doing really, really cool things. I really recommend you check out at Narrative DX on Twitter just to see what they're up to, and especially Sinem Ganay on Twitter as well, the CEO. If you're interested in technology, definitely reach out to people like Sinem, especially if you're in healthcare and you're kind of bordering the two. You know, we talk about entrepreneurship a lot, and it's not really the same thing as being a business owner, especially a lifestyle business. And we touch on that in the podcast as well. But some of us just really want to be entrepreneurs and don't know where to start. Start on Twitter. Reach out to people that are actually doing it. And you never know what kind of spark that might get you going with your entrepreneurial dreams. So I hope you really enjoyed that podcast. Let us know what you think. Tweet at us at Therapy Insiders at UpDoc Media. And please head over to iTunes and leave us a review for Therapy Insiders. We'll catch you next time.